Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking with Mark
Frerich.
Thank you. About some of the obstacles facing military veterans when getting health care.
Mark is from Lombard, Illinois, who enjoys a yoga practice, scuba diving, which is one of my passions, sleight of hand, and time with his friends and family. Publicly, he is known as the man who spent over 2.5 years as a hostage of Taliban forces. An American civil engineer and former U.S. Navy diver who disappeared in Afghanistan in January 2020 and was later confirmed to be captured by the Haqqani?
Yep.
Haqqani Network, which is a group closely aligned with the Taliban. In September 2022, Mark was released by the Taliban-led government of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan in exchange for Bashir Nuarzai?
Bashir Nuarzai.
Thank you. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for your service as well.
Yes, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today, Mark.
Yep, thanks, Mark.
I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. Mark, how long were you in the Navy before you returned to the Middle East as a private contractor? Also, have you applied for VA benefits, and what has the process been like for you?
I was in the Navy for 5 years, from 1981 to 1986. I spent 2 years as a fleet sailor on the USS America aircraft carrier. I then applied for a diver candidate, made it through U.S. Navy second class dive school. At the time, it was the second hardest, toughest schooling that the Navy had besides BUDS training for the SEALs. It was 12 weeks, and I went through the class at Little Creek, Virginia. And after 9/11, I got out, I got my degree, and I began doing contracting work, construction, building houses. 9/11 hit, and it pretty much put a dampener on the building industry. So I put my hat in the ring to go to Iraq in 2006. So 2006, 2009, I was in Iraq. 2009 to the time of my capture, I was in Afghanistan.
Okay, okay. And have you applied for VA benefits yet?
Yes, I have. I've been using the VA medical service, and I recently completed my paperwork for disability.
Okay. And how recently has that been? Because we
how
know
is the process.
Yeah, we know
you?
That it could
it
be
take a
very
long time.
Yeah.
it is kind of a long process in that second opinions are required, mm-hmm. Independent second opinions. So once the VA doctors do their thing, then you go to different various civilian activities. One for the hearing, perforated septum,
okay,
in my nose, tinnitus, along with PTSD that was diagnosed from my Navy time as a diver.
And Mark, from what I've read, you were malnourished, beaten, confined, and in obviously, I mean, can't help it, in poor mental and physical health for the majority of the time that you were held hostage. Have you spoken with healthcare providers about the possible long-term effects from your experience?
Yeah, that's why they're, you know, they're processing the paperwork for disability.
Okay.
For percentage of disability.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, the issue is being a contractor versus, you know, being active duty. There's really no box to check. I think I'm like the only guy that was a contractor, military contractor, and then captured. So it's been a difficult process because there's, like I say, there's no box to check for me. Mm-hmm. It's all virgin territory as far as my treatment and stuff goes. I mean, as a veteran, if you're honorably discharged, you are covered through the VA system, you know, regardless. But thankfully, Tammy Duckworth, mm-hmm. the senator here for Illinois, she was able to change my status to that of a returning combat veteran, which moves me up on the tier of treatment. You know, the returning veterans get first, you know, it's a different level of care. Mm-hmm. Dental seems to slip through the cracks.
Well, yeah, you have to be 100% disabled right. to get dental care in the VA system.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Thankfully, a local dentist reached out and took care of the issues I had.
Okay. That was amazing.
Yeah, because I can't even imagine, if you're in captivity, you're male, you know, you're not getting the nutrition you need. You're obviously not getting access to dental care and, you know, toothbrush and even toothpaste. So yeah, I can imagine that you needed some assistance there.
Right.
Yeah, I had some broken teeth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh.
I had some broken teeth from the abuse,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
from being kicked in the head.
Mm-hmm.
So they took care of that.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Good. Yeah.
While you were in captivity, did they provide any medical support to you at all? I know that sounds terrible, but
yeah.
Well, sometimes, I know.
Well,
I know.
No, but sometimes,
absolutely
like the Red,
not.
Right? Sometimes the UN or the Red Cross can get in to see those that are being held captive and provide them with medical care, but that is not always the case, unfortunately.
Right. So you're saying no?
Right. I was in a remote, isolated area. I laughed because I asked to see a doctor about 6 months in, and what that got me was one of the guys that trains their special forces come in to PT me every day, like they would go through. For about 10 days.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was grueling.
Yeah, that's not what you needed. That sounds like just more torture.
Yeah. They were enjoying it.
Okay.
I had low energy because I was on bread and water mostly. And I lost, the 32 months, I averaged, lost a pound a day. So I came out of it over 30 pounds lighter. I've been able to gain about 12 back, and I'm picking it back up, but yeah, I'm still about 20 pounds light of what I should be.
So Mark, you and I spoke privately before, but do you want to share what it was like when you finally got released? And did you have to be debriefed by members of our government? Did they say what you could or couldn't talk about with your experiences? How did that go?
Some of the stuff I was working on was sensitive. And there's a normal protocol there to where they really don't have to say for me not to say anything. I mean, there's certain things you can, you know, that you're allowed to talk about, some things you're not. I don't know what's been declassified and what has not. I did 60 hours of debrief in Langstad in Germany,
right, yeah.
Before I did it, I asked them if I could have a copy of the transcript. I said, I'll be, you know, it was voluntary, I didn't have to do it. I did it mainly so that they could have information to you know, to help other guys like me.
Mm-hmm.
In the future. And so I asked for, I said, yeah, I'll do it, but I want a copy of the transcripts so mm-hmm. I can write a book, but, you know, do whatever. At the end of it, when I tried to get the transcripts, they were classified. So I was unable to get the transcripts.
Hmm.
Okay. So you might have to wait a period of time before those documents.
Yeah, I got a good memory, so I really don't need
Okay.
But yeah, and I applied under Freedom of Information FOIA.
Mm-hmm.
And it came back that they were classified and they wouldn't let me see them. So.
Well, it sounds like you're still going through it then. For emotional support, have you been able to talk with any others that have been captive, you know, like POWs or other hostages? Do they set you up with that type of a support group for this kind of trauma?
No, because like I say, there's no box to check. I've got a case manager, and there's another thing I'm looking into. It's VAO, Veterans Assistance Officer or something. I urge all veterans to look into that. It's a person that's assigned to you, I think civilian, maybe former military, to help walk you through some of the paperwork and some of the, you know, some of the other issues that that veterans face.
Well, I know that when Jean Marie was going through her VA,
right, we went to like the Disabled American Veterans
and the AMVET,
right,
and they provided a
some assistance.
Yeah,
it was.
But the there should be a getting into the VA system for dummies book.
Well, I think it's always changing, and
well, then they changed the book.
And there's some challenges.
All right, I'm just saying that it is
It's
a hard system to
Mark,
navigate.
It is very challenging. Mark, prior to your going back as a contractor, had you received any service-related injuries in the Navy? And then as a follow-up question to that, did the injuries you received while in captivity, are they allowed to, are they included in your record for future care in the VA system, which I think we kind of touched on. But did you have to file, I don't know how to phrase that.
Well, since it's your question,
I had already been diagnosed with mm-hmm. PTSD.
Okay.
After my military time.
Right, you said from diving. Okay.
That helps.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just like PTSD on top of PTSD.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, now it's PTSD times two.
Right.
2.0.
Right. You're the new and improved version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that we have discussed the basics, I think our listeners have a better understanding of what you went through.
I don't think our listeners could possibly understand what you went through, Mark.
I probably should have read that first.
Well, yeah. We.
Yeah. You and I, again, we spoke privately, and Gene's right. I don't think words can.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Our typical ad read is not formatted for this episode.
Yeah.
But we are trying to provide medical items that will help our guests and our listening audience, and we're trying to tailor items depending on the diagnoses, basically. So we're just letting people know that this is our new initiative, and they can go to our website if they'd like to see more. And I don't know if we're going to have anything for PTSD, but you and I
management.
Can talk about it. Yeah. And maybe we can set up a whole page for PTSD items, if that would be okay with you. Like,
sure.
Like maybe meditation tapes, or I know you do yoga. So things like that, things that might help you overcome the trauma. And we're just trying to make it like a one-stop shopping where everybody can go and find what they need. But thank you anyway for taking the time to
you
join
want me
us.
To continue with this?
No, that's okay. Gene will take over.
Yeah.
All right. So, Mark, when you applied to the VA for healthcare, or when I applied to the VA for healthcare after my career-ending injury, I relied on the American Legion, and you were saying that you went to the Veterans Assistance Office. Did you find that to be helpful, and were there any issues when filling out your paperwork or applying for healthcare?
No, like I said, I was already in the VA system. I had been using the VA system before I deployed in 2006, you know, just for basic issues.
Oh, let me clear something up, if I may. I have one quick question. You said that after 9/11, you went back. Did you go back in as a service member?
No, as a contractor.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I kind of let that go, but right now it would be important. So go ahead.
Well, did you feel like you didn't want to go to the VA for any reasons? Like, for example, some veterans, and actually Tammy Duckworth has commented on this in the past, where the numbers don't match up. So the number of individuals applying for veterans license plates and for state-funded programs like discounted fishing licenses and things of that nature, that number is twice the number that of people who are applying for health care benefits at the VA itself. And she's trying to close that gap. And there could be a number of barriers there. I mean, for example, the paperwork and the process is challenging. There's the stigma that a lot of military personnel feel about asking for help. Eligibility requirements can be challenging. You know, like what is your, for some people who have a discharge status of other than honorable, but it's other than honorable because they had a mental health care crisis based on their military service. So, you know, maybe accepting those people and you know, that's a issue that has to be worked out with the system. And then there's people like yourself who may have a moral injury. So, and they may have a distrust of the government based on their experiences, or there's the lack of integration between the military and the VA. Your medical paperwork doesn't transfer over right away. The lack of control in selecting, like when you get to the VA, you're not able to like pick a healthcare provider and or review your healthcare providers. You know, like if you're going to a civilian doctor, you can go and look them up online and see where they went to school and what their education and experience and what other patients thought about them. And that's not something that's accessible to people getting care at the VA. And then also just the lack of facilities in the area, which I think you're in the Chicagoland area, so that may not be a problem. And then wait times for appointments can sometimes be very lengthy. And I think that's what you said about Tammy Duckworth putting you to the front of the line, because people who are just returning, they have they gain quicker access for appointments. And then the quality of care, people may question that. And I know that's a big, long list, and I apologize. But did you find that those were problematic for you in any way?
I can say this. Mm-hmm. After that experience, when I got stateside, mm-hmm. I didn't want to get out of bed. Luckily, I had, you know, some, you know, friends, you know, that helped me through. But yeah, I didn't want to become a part of society again. I had been out of the country for a decade and a half. Mm-hmm. So when I left, compared to what I came back to, night and day. Using the VA system, I touched bases with some of the returning veterans, younger than, you know, 40, 25, 30 years my junior. Mm-hmm. They kind of have the same feeling about this as I do, which is we went to a foreign country to make them more like us. You come back and they're worse off than they were, and we are acting more like them. And it seems to be a general consensus with some of the returning veterans. They feel that maybe their actions were in vain. Mm-hmm.
Do you think, I know there's a philosophy where you try to think globally, but act locally. So do you feel that, you know, doing things on a local level to help your community, does that help offset that a little bit? Like, do you participate with Dive Heart or other, you know, like charities so that you feel like you're making a difference? Because to help with...
Absolutely.
I mean, okay, because I was going to say, I can't imagine, but when you're in that deep of a depression, it can be hard to get out, and helping others can be very therapeutic. Yes, very therapeutic.
Yeah, helping other vets, mm-hmm. is very helpful for morale. I've gotten involved with the food bank, and I'm a I'm a practicing magician, so I'm volunteering to perform in the waiting rooms.
Oh, okay, yeah. Nice. Yeah, because that can be a drag. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was in there and there was a guy playing the guitar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, and was there a woman also singing with him occasionally? Because we might have been at the VA at the same time.
I got a trick you could do as a magician at the VA is make the wait time disappear.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry, I had to put that in there.
Yeah.
But that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And also for those on the floors where their people are living in the ward, it can be, if you set up a time to do magic for them, because it can be,
boring.
Yeah,
right.
It can be very monotonous.
Over at Hines, they have a spinal cord injury building. I don't know if you're aware of that, but, you know, they might.
Yeah.
One year,
we brought
music. It was an active duty Air Force quintet that we brought up from Scott Air Force Base.
And they really enjoyed it.
And boy, I'll tell you, for Christmas music going through the halls, I mean, it brought the holiday spirit.
And they played all of the different branches, their songs.
Right, right.
You know, it's funny because years ago when I was with the Rehab Institute of Chicago and we were doing the wheelchair softball, we played over there. It was a spinal cord unit. They had several people on their wheelchair softball team.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it's amazing what's out there.
Yeah, and yeah, so anything to break up the day.
Yeah,
it's great.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Mark, what about the stigma? What were your thoughts about the stigma that veterans associate with asking for help, or you know, I mean, is it not macho, or what do you?
Well, why don't you ask Gene and I first?
Oh, no. But here's the thing. And also, I don't want to be sexist, but also being a man, is it hard to ask for help?
Right.
Or to realize, yeah, you do need help.
Military or not.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, you have it, you know, I think twice
the
challenge.
Whammy.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're warriors.
Right.
You know, we're tough. And... you know, asking for help is a sign of weakness to a lot of guys. So.
But it also, you know, I think it could be the biggest sign of strength.
But is that starting to change?
Yeah, that's what I was,
Do you think that's starting to change where people are starting to realize that, as Gene said, it is a form of strength, being able to ask for help because it had been associated with not being strong?
Yeah, I think so, because what's the alternative? You know, putting a bullet in my brain? That's what a lot of them are doing. It just breaks my heart. I mean, these guys are coming back, girls coming back. You know, there was a lot of sexual abuse issues. This was one of the more women deployed than any other time in U.S. war history. There was a lot of issues there that are now surfacing. Women are traumatized as men, you know, just in a different, realm.
You think that stigma is still there, though?
I think a little bit. Some of these guys are avoiding, you know, seeking help, but ending up, you know, with maybe police issues or, you know, it comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
All right. And what do you think the biggest misconceptions about the VA healthcare system are?
I want to put this out right, because I'm 100% satisfied with the VA.
Okay.
They're top-notch doctors. The care's top-notch. I'm fortunate that I'm here close to Hines.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, you know, some people are in remote areas or not next, you know, they're not close to a VA hospital. Transportation is an issue. They just stopped one of the services. They were paying for the Uber, paying for the Uber rides. In other words, you could just call them up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Call up your provider. Your provider would call up Uber.
Wow.
And arrange it. And everything's paid for, but they stopped that.
Huh. Maybe insurance, safety.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think the stigmas aren't really warranted. I mean, in my case, at Heinz VA, you know, I mean, it's just maybe it's a lack of information, or, you know, they haven't investigated it enough to see the benefits of it.
Okay. All right. Now, Mark, I met you a few weeks ago during the diving with Dive Heart. Are there any other recreational therapy programs that you are working with, or do you know that are offered by the VA? I mean, earlier we talked about the music and...
Tai Chi is one that is authorized by the VA. I don't know if they've got that at... I know. I don't know if they've got that at Heinz, but that would be interesting to... Because, you know, yoga, Tai Chi, right up your alley.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any. Okay. I mean, certainly there is. I'm sure, like you say, Tai Chi and, you know, there's other things. I'm not aware of them, but certainly there is.
They probably need to get the word out a little bit
better. Right, right. And maybe your I know it's challenging because your healthcare provider is probably, you know, trying to oversee so many things that taking time to say, and by the way, you know, check out the recreational therapy department. That's a lot to throw in there.
Right. Well, but like the one that's at Jesse Brown, they have a full weight room. I mean, like a gym size
waiting area
for weights. Weight room.
Okay.
Weights,
oh, I see.
Weight
okay,
room.
Okay.
Well, I know what you guys are talking about. And again, I've got to throw the plug in for rec therapy. Lita's well aware of it as well. But, you know, if you don't have your outlet, if you don't have something that that brings joy to you, that really affects the rest of who you are.
Right. It's one of the keystones for happiness.
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely.
That's some of the advice that I give, you know, veterans that I interface with is get back to what you enjoyed.
Exactly.
Right. If it's fishing, go fishing. But, you know.
In Illinois, you can get a discounted fishing license.
Right.
Right. What made you happy? What made you fulfilled, satisfied before all this?
Right.
And it's not easy.
No, it's not a magic pill either, but it's helpful.
Yeah.
I can tell you, you know, when you don't want to get out of bed and there's no... You have no drive and there's no satisfaction in doing anything. That's depression.
Yes.
And it's tough to battle. It really is. And people interfacing with me didn't know how to handle it. You know, I mean, they handled it well, but they weren't trained in you know, in any way in how to deal with something like that.
Thankfully, you had people that really cared for you, because that's key. You know, they wanted the best for you.
And I think that's what leads into Lita's next question.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
What role have friends and family played in your transition back home?
And I think even, like, to get you back home, your sister, I think, is one who fought very hard to get you back home.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I moved back into Lombard. I'm, you know, I'm very close with my dad and my mom and my sisters. And, yeah, that's important to come back to something that's familiar to kind of rebase yourself. But like I said, it's they're not trained professionals. They're just dealing with it the best that they know. You know, getting in a relationship, a good solid, you know, relationship, if possible, that's helpful.
Okay.
You know, having
that
someone
support.
There.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Well, so far you're on the right path, and we will keep praying that you keep going in the right path, and that things will finally fall in line for you. With all the Middle East conflict in the headlines lately, I'm sure that there are worried families knowing that their loved ones are being held captive, some being children. What advice do you have for friends and family of individuals of those being held captive around the world?
Don't lose faith. You know, it's easy for me now to say, oh, wow, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was bad, but I survived it. I got all my limbs. I'm still trying to get things back physically. I was chained for 2 years without release. My ankles were chained, my wrists were chained. I was on a dirt floor on a donkey blanket eating bread and water for 32 months. 2 years of that unended perpetual chaining. I think one of the reasons is because I tried to escape and they didn't like that. And some stuff that I'm not even going to go into, but there were ways that they tried to keep me from escaping, like seeing to it that I couldn't run. Actually, I'm gonna put it out there. They took the Leatherman that I had in my pocket. My toenails grew out. They took the Leatherman that they stole from me and pulled out the first three toenails of my left foot. So I couldn't run. I'm still dealing with a foot issue because of that. They weren't kind, and they were just young kids, and they were unsupervised. I'm out in a remote location, and I got a bunch of teenagers that know nothing other than their entire life, I'm the enemy. You know, they're 20 years old, the war's been going on for 20 years. You know, it's been drilled into their heads their entire lives that, just like I said on the interview, they said, Taliban good, America no good. And that was their sentiment. And, you know, wow, we got one of these guys now. And, you know, they were, just imagine their zeal. Wow, we got one of these guys.
Right, right.
And there's nobody, there's no protocol. You know, I understand Islam, spending that much time there. How the Quran indicates how you should treat prisoners, which is, you know, with kindness and thoughtfulness. And the videos that surfaced of the abuse of their prisoners didn't help. Mm-hmm. You know, the footage that came from Guantanamo and some of these other things.
Waterboarding, sure, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I could understand that, yeah.
Okay.
Well, they learned that it's difficult to waterboard a diver. We can breathe through our mouths without breathing through our nose. So as long as you can swallow a lot of water, it was fruitless them trying that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And it wasn't like they were trying to get information out of me. It was just another form of harassment.
That's right. Do you have
what
any?
What can we do to this guy?
Right. Do and you I, have I, any?
And, well, I would say, and I think for the people that are currently being held captive, mm-hmm. Hopefully their families, because I think your sister's persistence, and then working with Tammy Duckworth, and then Tammy Duckworth's persistence on getting you released was vital to finally getting you back home. So maybe just not giving up for those families, you know, just be persistent, and you know, that might help as well.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a veteran such as Tammy Duckworth on my side was very, very helpful.
Okay.
Actually, that's how I got connected with Dive Hard. She had dove with Dive Hard.
Right.
And when she saw that I was a diver, she...
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Perfect match.
Right, yeah. Right.
6 degrees of separation,
yeah, I mean,
right?
Dive Hard is perfect for me because it's something I enjoy doing. And it gives me an opportunity to you know, help others.
We're going to have to get you on a trip soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maldives.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the wetsuit.
There you go.
Thanks for the Henderson.
Yeah. And Mark, you had alluded to it before. Are you working on a book? Is that a future project? And how are you dealing with, you know, bringing up all those, you know, dredging up all those memories?
Currently, I'm not working on a book.
Okay.
I can say I do have some things cooking. Mm-hmm. Through Michael Ames, he's at the New Yorker magazine. Mm-hmm. He wrote the first article. I've been pretty much off the media. Mm-hmm. You know, I did the PBS interview. I did an interview for the local newspaper, the Daily Herald, I believe it's called here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. and I did the Michael Ames piece. Michael Ames piece came out first, then the PBS, it was a two-part interview with Amna Juarez, and then I did a piece for, I think it was Marnie Pike with the Daily Herald. But other than that, I've been kind of keeping a low profile. But yeah, there's perhaps a movie rights and stuff going on. I can't really, sure. You know, I can't really get into it. Mm-hmm. I'll let it come more to fruition before I, you know, openly discuss it. But sure. Yeah, I've got some things going. Also, there are different conduits in place for restitution through funds that have been held from countries like Iran, billions of dollars that are being held that are available, to people that have been held hostage. I think the quagmire is we've come up with this policy that we do not negotiate with terrorists. Mm-hmm. That's what we say.
Right, so that we don't encourage.
But
right.
For 2 years in Qatar, what were they doing? Mm-hmm. They were negotiating with terrorists. Mm. The reason it took me so long to be released was because I was captured 20 days before Trump signed the peace agreement. So I wasn't on it. They right. didn't include me. Mm-hmm. Because it was too, and then COVID hit. I totally dodged that bullet.
Yeah, I think I read that you weren't sure if that was another tactic that they were using to like torture you by telling you that there was COVID and what was going on there.
Yeah, and actually they were spot on. There was only two guys out of all of them that mm-hmm. spoke English.
Okay.
I speak the language. I could understand what they were saying. I didn't let them know that, I didn't let them know that,
you knew.
I spoke Pashto and Farsi, Dari, and all the local languages. So after a while, they would whisper at first, mm-hmm. and then they're over time they would, I could understand what they were saying. So at least I had a little bit of insight there. But yeah, there was only two guys that spoke English. One of them was a driver, which actually treated me pretty kind. And then there was the other guy that beat me with a chain, which I'm not very fond of him. Mm-hmm. But they would, their job was to go around to the different remote sites, drop off supplies, pick up, correspondence and kind of connect all that. They use shortwave radios. They're very stealthy about it, very short staccato, boom, and then they're radio silence. So, mm-hmm.
And I guess they came close to rescuing you. And I think I read that, they came in, they did try to rescue you at one point when at the beginning of your captivity and just missed because you had just been relocated.
Man, it would have been so great to see the teams come in and get
me. Yes, and then you wouldn't have.
Yeah, when they first grabbed me, they didn't know what to do with me. Mm-hmm. And they're driving around. I could hear them on the radio. They're, I'm in a trunk of the car. Mm-hmm. It's February, cold. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the first place they dropped me off, and they weren't very organized. They're just
right,
kids.
You were.
I saw that. They put me in a room. In this remote village, just briefly, I think to decide what they were going to do with me. Put me in a room, and I looked over and my cell phone with the battery taken out and the SIM card taken out was sitting there. Mm-hmm. When I travel, I just, I use a burn phone. I mm-hmm. just use a cheap Nokia, just in case something like this happens. And yeah, it was sitting there. So I'm like, I'm thinking, is this a trap? Yeah. Isn't that stupid?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't care if it's a trap or not. I'm going for it. I got over there.
Yeah.
I think they chained my ankles at that time, but my hands were free.
Okay.
And like I say, it's an old phone, so it took a while to fire up. I got the SIM card in, I got the battery, and it's one of those old ones where the SIM card's under the battery. And I didn't get the SIM card lined up perfectly.
Oh.
So I had to take it back apart again, got it together, and just got a signal out. Got connectivity, and they came in, and I could see them coming up to the window, and I knew there was a little bit of time before they could unlock the door and get in there. I saw that the phone had connectivity, and there was some blankets and debris and stuff in the room. So I took the phone, and I threw it underneath one of the blankets on the far side of the room, just to buy me as much time as I could.
Right.
Get a signal out. Yeah, apparently they picked up that signal. They sent the teams in, but they had already changed my location. So,
okay. And to learn more about this and more about Mark's experience, you can check out that 2-part PBS interview.
Yeah, I'll put a link on our website.
Yep.
And thank you so much for joining our show today, Mark. I mean, this was an amazing experience for you to share with our listeners.
Mm-hmm. And not something... I mean, right now there are quite a few families who are probably curious what, you know, such an experience is like,
right?
Given recent events. But worldwide, there are people in captivity right now in all parts around the world, even here in the United States, unfortunately, and, you know, that it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you for joining us, Mark. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
If you have any questions or comments related to today's show, you can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com. We're on our website, podcastdx.com. We're also found on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter.
Not Twitter. Where do you see Twitter?
No, not Twitter.
Okay. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.